In just a moment, I'm going to say a word. And what I'd like everyone to do, when you hear this word, I just want you to think of the first thoughts that come to your mind. You may want to write it down, write them down. It may just be one word, maybe a sentence, might be a paragraph. And I kind of encourage everyone, if you're taking notes, to update that thought as we go through the message today. Now, are you ready? That word is family. Family. So when you, I'll let everybody think about that for a minute. But when you think and consider the word family, it can invoke a lot of different thoughts. Sometimes frustration, sometimes stress, security. A lot of different thoughts may come to mind. But family is something that I think it's safe to say all of us have family of one form or another. I think most of us have heard the worldly saying, you can choose your friends, but you're stuck with your family. Now, I hope we don't think about it that way. In fact, by the time this message is done, I hope we look at it completely different than what that saying represents. I hope as we go through this message today, we all have a better and a clearer understanding of what family is and how important family is, should be to us, but not only to us, how important family is to God. Before the creation of this universe, this world that we live on, family was foremost in God's mind. And his entire plan is based on one end result. That is, he's building a family. And at the end of the day, when everything's completed, those that are left will be siblings. We'll be family members. We'll be brothers with Christ. God will be the Father. Now, I'm going to speak on, we're going to take a look at three very important aspects of family. Last week, it was kind of funny, as I was putting this message together, it takes, usually I think for most of us, a little bit of time. We give it a lot of thought, do some research. And on the Sabbath, I've been listening to the Cincinnati webcast, their live webcast. And last Sabbath, Steve Myers gave a very, very good sermon, and it's very similar to the one I'm giving today. It's kind of funny. His was on fatherhood. Now, obviously today, this is takes a more inclusive look at family, the entire family. And some of the things he spoke on are very much the same things we'll be hearing today. So those three aspects of family we'll look at is our physical family. And when I say physical family, that's different than all of us sitting here today. Our physical family may be non-believers in our way of life or God's way of life. The world as we know it and the family structure in the world. So that's when we say physical family, that's what we're going to be looking at. Another aspect is our spiritual family. And our spiritual family is, look around. This is our spiritual family. This is the spiritual family right here. And the third and final aspect is the family God is building. That end result that I just spoke of. The spiritual family, the siblings of Christ, when everything is complete. But we're going to begin today by looking at the physical family. And it's pretty safe to say we can all see that the family structure in today's world is being torn apart. It's being destroyed. The Washington Times, I'm going to quote out of the Washington Times, analyzed the most recent census data showing that the percentage of two-parent families has dropped significantly over the past decade in virtually all 50 states. Even as the total number of American households with children increased by 160,000 over the last decade, the number of two-parent households decreased and this staggering number, by 1.2 million. Today, one-third of American children, a total of 15 million, that's incredible, 15 million are being raised without a father. Nearly 5 million more children live without a mother. Those are some incredible statistics. That's what the family structure is turning into in today's world. Now, it wasn't very long ago, and this isn't gay bashing, it wasn't very long ago, but gay marriage wasn't legal in any one of the 50 states. And at last count, this is a very recent number, at last count, 19 out of 50 states have legalized gay marriage. That's pretty incredible as well. We can see that it's happening more rapidly every day. In an article in the Huffington Post by Jawed Kalim, in a monumental move, the nation's largest Presbyterian denomination voted Thursday to change its definition of marriage and allow its pastors to officiate same-sex marriages. That is where, in the states where gay marriage is legal. By a vote of 429 to 175, leaders of the 1.76 million member Presbyterian Church USA voted during the biannual General Assembly in Detroit to change the denomination's book of order to describe marriage as being between two people. This decision opens a path towards gay marriage across the denomination's 10,000 churches. Now, quick question. How does any of these changes promote or strengthen the family structure? And I think we can all answer that for ourselves. It's very, very difficult to grow a family structure in that kind of environment or this kind of environment. How does that promote family? Now, this is just one simple example of how Satan, the devil, is tearing apart what God has been trying to establish since the beginning of time, before the beginning of time as we know it. He's tearing apart the family structure, and it's happening more and more rapidly every day. Now, let's look at something else when it comes to family, or that physical family. There's many examples throughout the Bible of, frankly, how ruthless and how brutal family can be. Those non-believing members, or in some cases, believing members, maybe. It's very much like Mr. Kennedy was speaking about in the Bible study. We are examples to one another. But let's turn to one of our first scriptures today. Let's look over at Matthew 10. In Matthew 10, and I'm going to begin reading in verse 21. And this is just an example of from the Bible of how family can treat family. Now, brother, and this is verse 21 of Matthew 10. Now, brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child. Can you imagine that? And children will rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. Verse 22. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But he who endures till the end will be saved. You can also find a similar reference over in Mark 13, verses 12 and 13. Now, I don't want to focus strictly on the negative aspects of family. So we are going to look at some very positive aspects of the physical family. But I want to turn back to the book of Genesis. Let's turn back to the book of Genesis. Genesis 37. And this is something I think we can all relate to when we think about how brutal and sometimes ruthless family can be. Genesis 37, we've all heard the story of Joseph and his brothers. And I want to start reading, and we're not going to read the entire story, we're just going to kind of skim through it. Genesis 37, starting in verse 4. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now, we know when we read from verse 4 down through chapter 37. Well, Joseph, he kind of had a little attitude problem of his own. You know, he provoked a lot of this. But was it justified what took place in the end? I'm not here to say. I don't think it was justified. So, but he did have an attitude. Hey, look at me, look at me, look at all these dreams. I dreamed another dream. Look at this. And he just continued to exacerbate the situation. And dropping down to verse 23. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers, they had stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Then they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And so they take his source of warmth away from him. They throw in a pit where there's no food, no water, no nothing. And what were they hoping for at the end? Well, this is just an example of how brothers can really kind of turn against brothers. And you know, I hope none of us are quite like Joseph, where we're egging people on and we're, hey, look at this, look at me, and this is good. You know, look at this dream. But more importantly, I hope none of our family members are like Joseph's brothers. But these are examples we need to look at. Now, staying in Genesis, but turning back to chapter 27, I want to look at one more example. Genesis 27, beginning in verse 41, and we all know the story of Esau and Jacob, but this is just another example how family can just become vicious and turn against one another. So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessings which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." I mean, he had nothing but anger. But we also know that Jacob did a little deception of his own. In verse 42, "And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, 'Surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning the intent to kill you.'" So he's finding comfort in this whole idea of, I'm going to get him, I'm going to tear him apart, I'm going to kill it. He's taking comfort in this. It's a pretty bad example. So let's stop focusing on those negative aspects of the physical family. And there are some very positive stories we can read, and I don't want to go through all of them, but I want to focus on one. And in the book of Ruth, we all know the story of Ruth. And let's turn over to Ruth 1, because there's a really uplifting, pretty emotional story, frankly. And when we talk about physical family, we've all got to remember that it doesn't necessarily mean blood. Physical family, we've got in-laws, we've got extended family members. But in the book of Ruth, Ruth 1, and I just want to focus on the encouraging part of this story, verse 14, "And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, 'Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law.'" And this is where it gets kind of cool. "But Ruth said, 'Entreat me not to leave you.'" Don't make me leave you. Don't make me leave you. I want to stay here. "And where you lodge, or or turn back, hang on just a second, lost my place, entreat me not to leave you, or turn back from following after you. For where you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people. This is devotion. And your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and I. This is devotion. This is a connection. This is an emotional connection. And it really kind of epitomizes what family should be. That devotion, that dedication, that we want to be with one another. We want to be with one another. Now let's take a look at the second aspect of family, and that's that spiritual family we spoke of. And that's you and I. That's everybody sitting here today. And we've all got something in common. That's the Spirit of God. That's what makes us a spiritual family. We have been called. We have answered the calling. We have the Spirit of God. And exactly what makes us a spiritual family? Let's turn over to the book of Matthew, Matthew 12. And we'll hear from Jesus Christ himself what makes us a spiritual family. What makes us part of one another? Matthew 12, we're going to start in verse 46. While he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and his brothers stood outside, seeking to speak with him. Then one said to him, look, your mother and brother are standing outside seeking to speak with you. But he answered to the one who told him, who is my mother? And who are my brothers? And he stretched out his hands towards his disciples, those who believed in him, and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whosoever does the will of my Father in heaven. Now this is the key. This is what makes us spiritual family. This is what makes us siblings, brothers and sisters in God's family. The word brethren, and we use this quite often here. Brothers and sisters. Spiritual brothers and sisters. For whosoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother. But we all have one Father, and that's the Father God. You can find that same reference in Mark 3, verses 31 through 35. What else makes us a spiritual family? Well, let's turn back a little bit to the book of Romans and take a quick look. Romans 8. In Romans 8, for as many, 8:14, excuse me, Romans 8, verse 14, for as many as are led by the Spirit of God, led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of bondage, again of fear, but you received the spirit of adoption. God is adopting us. He is taking us under his wing. By whom we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are called, or that we are, children of God. Spiritual, physical, yes, but we are children of God, and we are siblings, spiritual siblings, with one another. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. This is the end result, that we may all be glorified together. Now, we all know that as spiritual family, we've got a job to do. We've got a role to play in this society. We're told we're lights of this world, lights in a dark world. We have an influence and an example to show to everyone. And we've got to look around in the world we live in, be it our boss, grocery clerk, people that don't like us, people that, in this physical form, we may not get along with real well, but we need to be examples. And sometimes, I think in most cases, our example isn't made apparent. You know, the example we set, the influence that we lend, if you will, to this world. But that's what we're told to be. But we know in the book of Revelations, and we're not going to turn there, the book of Revelations tells us about the thousand-year reign with Jesus Christ, our brother, with Jesus Christ as our sibling at that point in time, that we're going to be kings and priests, and we're going to play a role, play a part. We're going to be teachers. But what are we going to be teaching? We're going to be teaching those around us, those that are here, how to be family members, how to get along with one another, how to really show that agape love that we've heard so much about. It's overwhelming when you think about it. It really is. It's imperative, not only important, it's imperative that we get along as a family, a spiritual family, and we show that example, that we provide that example to those that we are with. And it's safe to say that we associate with or we're around those in the world more than we're around those here today. And our example is critical. Now, again, our example may not be apparent in this physical form, but one day when the great white throne judgment takes place and those that have ever lived open their eyes for the first time and they remember, wow, they were right. The example just paid off. I should have listened. I should have paid attention. They were right. Now, I know there's those here today that their family members are hostile to the church. Doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter. One day, the example that we're all setting to those that we're around every day will show itself. Let's turn over to the book of 1 John. First John 4. First John 4. And let's read in verse 20. For if someone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have heard from him, that he who loves God must, didn't say should, must love his brother. This is the example, the agape love of loving each other, loving our brothers and sisters, loving those around us. Even those who hate us, we have to love them. We have to shine that example, that light that God's given us. Now, you don't have to turn there. I'll read it out of my notes. But in Acts 13:26, and men and brethren, sons of the family of Abraham, and those among you who fear God, those among you who fear God, that should be us, to you the word of this salvation has been sent. That's what makes us a spiritual family. But we've also got that incredible responsibility of being examples to those that aren't called. That example will show itself one day. And again, you don't have to turn there. In Acts 3:25, you are sons of the prophet and of the covenant which God made with our fathers, saying to Abraham, in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. The families. Family is so very important, but we can't look at the family as those we have something in common with. You know, I mean, do we have everything in common with those here today? I don't think so. If there's those out there that are going to go rock climbing, I'm not going to do that. I don't have that in common with you. But we all have something very, very important in common. That's that common mindset. That common goal. The Spirit of God. And again, you don't have to turn there, but you can jot this down. 1 Peter 3, starting in verse 7. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Finally, all of you, be of one mind. That's what I was just talking about. Be of one mind. Let's have common thought processes. Now, we're not going to have everything in common with those around us. There's going to be those that I want to associate with more because, you know, they're as lazy as I am. But bottom line is, we have to have that common thought process. Finally, all of you being of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love. Love as brothers. Be tender-hearted. Be courteous. Not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. That's incredible, brethren. That is an awesome statement right there. In Hebrews 13, verse 1, let brotherly love continue. That's us. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who were mistreated, since you yourself are in the body also. That's us. Now, we're spiritual family, but we've got to look at not just those around us. We've got to consider everyone, those we work with, those we associate with. We have to be that influence. Now we can see some other examples, and I'll just refer to this. Proverbs 22:6. Train up your children in the way they should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from that. Now, I would love to take credit for raising my son. I can't. I've got to give so much credit to those here today, because he has been raised by the congregation. We are family members in common. I know there's a lot of children in this congregation. I would like to think I have a small part in some of the way they think. And hopefully when they grow old, like Proverbs 22:6 says, train a children up in the way they should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's all of us that are teaching these children. Now, let's look at one of the last aspects, the final aspect, and that's the family God is building. And the family God is building goes well beyond the millennium, goes well beyond the white throne judgment. It goes into the eternal future. And when you think about this, the family that he's been teaching us to be a part of is so incredible, so incredible. You can turn there if you'd like, in 1 John 3. 1 John 3, and I'm going to read several scriptures out of 1 John. 1 John 3. 1 John 3 and verse 1. Behold, what manner of love the Father, the head of the house, the head of the family, has bestowed on us, that we should be called children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us, because it did not know him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and this is the key, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be. We don't know exactly what it is we're going to be, but one thing we can take to the bank, we're going to be siblings with Christ. We're going to be siblings with one another, spiritual siblings. We're learning here now in this life how to get along with one another. But we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And anyone who has this hope in him purifies himself, just as he is pure. That hope of being that eternal spiritual family, to play a part in the family of God, to have Jesus Christ as our elder brother. That's just absolutely incredible when you think about it. And in verse 4, in 1 John 3, whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. And you know that he was manifest to take away our sins, and in him there is no sin. Whoever abides in him does not sin. You know, that's the caveat. That's the caveat right there. We can't compromise. We are examples. We can't compromise when we associate with the rest of the world. And there's a lot of temptation out there. You know, we've got a little bit of pork. We forgot you didn't eat, you know, whatever the case is. Do we compromise? Do others see us compromise? Are we giving that perfect example that God the Father wants us to give or shine? That Jesus Christ wants us to shine. In verse 7, little children, let no one deceive you. He who practices righteousness is righteous, he just as he is righteous. He who sins is of the devil, for the devil has sinned from the beginning. For this purpose, the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. Whoever has been born of God does not sin, for his seed remains in him. We have God's seed. We have his spirit. That's what makes us spiritual family. It's going to grow into the eternal family of God. Verse 10. And in this, the children of God and the children of the devil. Now, I want you to think about this. There are two sets of families out there. Those that get it, those that believe it, those that understand it, those that don't compromise, and the children of the devil. There are two different levels. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is he that does not love his brother. That's something we should all really, really think about when we think of family. And when we think of family, it's not necessarily a bloodline. You know, Jesus Christ came from the bloodline or the house of David. It's great to be part of an honorable family. It's not about the bloodline. It's about those that we are around. We should look at everyone that we associate with as potential siblings, potential brothers. We should be always thinking about the example that we are shining. We need to think about how, we need to remember how important it is to be family and how important family throughout time has been to God. This has been his goal. This has been his mission since before the foundation of this world, before time as we know it. God has been building his family. We have a tremendous opportunity to be part of that family of God. Today, we're part of a spiritual family. Let's keep that in mind, and let's remember that we're all brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ.